so we have a discussion by Ivan Wei on T-bar menu and the recommended tags.
Okay, so good morning. My name's Ivan. I will be your server today. The chef Song will very soon be presenting the chef special to you. But we wanted to start with a broad, you know, view of this subject, which involves a classic deformation of any quantum field theory in two dimensions, known as TT bar. I can fill in, you know, some of the basic details if people ask. But it's been generalized quite a bit at varying levels of approximation. And we can talk about any that you guys want in this discussion. I should, you know, explain perhaps a little bit more about what the drink and food options are, but first I guess I should label the entries here. So, for example, bulk ADS, which would potentially be paired with TT bar, is Argentinian beef. Kerr is part of the chef special, and so it's dumplings. Also falafel for those who. DS and FRW. Well, it's clear what those are, right? The Impossible Burger. And the Beyond Burger.
It's
pre-arranged. Sorry? Okay, you missed the most important part. This is not a talk at all. So, I don't drink, so I can't label the top row. For now, let me just say a little bit more about what these different versions are. Maybe list a few questions. And then, as I say, Wei will talk about the chef special.
Can I, before you start,
yes.
Can I make a request?
Sure.
Please say things so that those of us who don't already know all about TT bar understand what you're talking about.
Fair. So let me start with the one, these two that are universal. What we mean by that is you can take any 2D QFT. You can deform it in a way that is defined by saying d lambda, where lambda is the deformation parameter of the log of the partition function. I'm going to cheat to get my own conventions because I prefer to use those. So is, in some conventions, minus 2 pi integral over the two-dimensional space. Something that is terrible notation, but is called TT bar, that I'll explain shortly. To include this second universal deformation, which was one of the more novel things, I'll include that now. So this is what I call lambda 2. This TT bar is a composite operator, which is really in some notation, 1/8. Some conventions, I should say, TAB, TBA, minus TA squared. And in 2004, Zavlajikov played around with this, wrote a paper where he showed that just using stress energy conservation, translation symmetry, and cluster decomposition, that this operator factorizes. So whereas a normal irrelevant operator would be complicated to control as you add it to some theory. And I should say this is expressed as a differential equation. So that's super important. When you express things that way, you can show, Zavlajikov showed first that this thing factorizes, so it doesn't have any ultraviolet ambiguities. Then in 2016, he and Smirnov and an Italian group, Cavagli et al., showed how to translate this into a calculation of the energy levels. If you presume you know the energy levels of the original QFT, then you can derive what they are in the different. So I can even show that, including this lambda 2, if people would like to see that.
Is this equation supposed to be defining the deformation, or is it a consequence of
It's defining it, and it's good to dwell on this because, I mean, this can't be a whole pedagogical thing, but it is good to dwell on it because normally you might think about taking some theory and adding some operator relevant or irrelevant or marginal with a large coefficient, trying to deal with the consequences of that. Instead, this is you have this seed theory, and you define some trajectory based on this differential equation instead. And this, so you solve this with a boundary condition that it agrees with what you had in the seed theory.
But this only defines a theory if the partition function defines a theory, right?
Well, okay, good. There's a great discussion to be had about what the full list of observables are in this theory. There are different views of that, so there's not really a clear answer to that, in fact. But to put more fake meat on the bones. Actually, this one is real meat. This one is fake meat. I will indulge in the simple calculation of the energy levels if people want. Do people want, or would that be too boring for?
I think the result might be useful.
Yeah, it'd be good to have it written down. Yeah, okay.
Before you do that, since you used the words any QFT and uh-huh. mentioned translation invariance, do you have in mind, is it required that we be in flat space?
Good. So thanks for asking. On the drink menu, there's all these options. Curve space is very interesting, and it has not been controlled yet at the same level as flat space has. However, there is some progress on that. You heard Ronak Soni's talk on that, approaching it using the fact that, trying to generalize a reformulation of these deformations through two-dimensional gravity integral transforms. So people are working on that. For a while, they thought they had this done, that it just localized and was manifestly finite. Instead, they have some arguments that it makes sense, but it's still in progress. So that's one of the great action items still, as far as I understand. In general, with this and something I cryptically wrote here, one can work at the level of large C with the idea that there's factorization, then in the hope that that is an approximation to a more complete theory. And all of that can be said about curvature as well as other of these drinks. So since Ted asked, or somebody asked, let's translate this into the energy level deformations. We'll start from the statement that it factorizes, so this thing factorizes. I'm not going to show you that, but it is a very beautiful, quick argument in the 2004 paper. So now we use the very meaning of the stress energy tensor, which is that the energy density is then in some homogeneous state, minus the upper lower stress energy tensor. In our conventions, it really is that. Other people put it 2 pi in the way. So you'll see slight variance of this formula. The pressure is a spatial component, and the angular momentum. Say an Euclidean signature is this off diagonal component, and so the idea is, and also this d lambda of essentially the action is minus d lambda of the Hamiltonian. So you can now imagine plugging these things in using the factorization into here. This one that we added doesn't change any of it in terms of the tractability. And the answer, so just plugging that into there, gives the following equation. This is a solvable differential equation by characteristics. And the solution is...
Also an equation for J.
J is just some quantized momentum. It doesn't evolve because it's quantized. Yeah, that's a good question, but that's part of it. Okay, so eta minus, now I'm specializing to a CFT because I guess we want our beef and our fake beef. Sorry about this. The undressed energies or, you know, dimensions, global energies of the CFT sit here, the J sits here. An eta, this thing that would be one in the original version of the deformation where this term would be absent, is in there non-trivially. So this is what I was calling lambda 2, but it's just a solvable. So we get these energies for that case. Okay, so this is not some sort of talk or anything like that, but basically that is just interesting in itself. We could just do that, generalize it in various ways, and people have done very interesting generalizations. It's also natural to ask about pairings to holography, to the gravity side of holography.
Can you say something about the sign of the deformation?
Good, yes, that is very important. So I've taken the sign that I consider the most interesting, lambda positive. So you see in this formula that for lambda positive, these dressed energies become complex at some energy level. So if you want a unitary theory, you should keep the real energy levels. Conversely, the vacuum, if you don't add bells and whistles like supersymmetry, has that complexness for the other sign of the deformation.
And is the flow understood to be so well-defined all the way up to that critical value, or?
Well, these equations have this solution regardless, and then we can start to discuss what the physical interpretation is, what you want to do with it. Truncating the dressed energy spectrum will preserve unitarity, but do violence to other properties, like locality. However, for very special seed theories like holographic large radius ones, and I have to say all this food will generate large radius. those have emergent locality in a special way, so one should keep that in mind. Yes.
So for eta not equal to 1, you take the limit that lambda goes to 0, then wouldn't we get a divergent quantity?
Very good. So. Thank you. So when I say this lambda 2 is always available, what I mean is it's always available in combination with TT bar. So it essentially doubles the space of these solvable deformations, but in the sense that you got to go along TT bar for some ways before this makes sense. Okay, we stumbled on this because we were essentially imitating the MMV proposed pairing between this and a cutoff version of this. We just simply generalized it to generate energy levels that correspond to a cutoff version of DS instead. So, but as everyone knows, pardon?
I'm confused how this last comment interacts with your solution here, which looks like it took eta as a constant for all lambda. I'm just confused by the structure here. You solved
well, so, which comment? The comment about how we would need... So the problem is if eta is negative, right, then we can't send lambda to zero. That was the previous comment.
The comment was that if eta is not exactly one, you can't send lambda to zero because it looks like that...
Oh, no. Okay, I'm careful. So this is a counterterm. In our papers, we just call it some counterterm. It can be shifted around at the end of the day. It's really not the interesting part of the theory. This is one, and it does, you know, become one when you work with the standard, you know, dictionaries. You go out in ADS and you want to cancel all the divergences and you want to go back to the original boundary. I mean, this is all as in your paper. I enjoyed very much the streamlined description of this there. So this is nothing really new. But when the sign flips in here, it makes a big difference. And that...
But I thought the comment was that the flow appears to be ill-defined at lambda equals zero when eta is not one. And I thought you said the resolution was you should think of eta as something that I could make a function of lambda and I could turn it off at the beginning and then turn it on later.
Oh.
And I feel like you solved the equations with constant eta and I'm just confused about how I should interpret the result.
Okay, fair enough. I think if you do something which ends up, you know, putting this inside here with a positive, you know, as a positive number, it will, you know, be something that could be absorbed probably into other. It is available. This is the solution. Whether it's really independent of the previous, you know, space of just TT bar alone. Maybe there's room for it to even be different at that level, but I think, you know, if we rescale this, rescale that, and rescale that, we could probably just undo all of it in that case. But when this is negative, it's a very different situation.
Is there a term for when the constant
shifts
the proportion to 1 minus eta?
So here, there's this.
Is that the square?
Well, there.
You want to connect it through the.
Oh, excuse me. Yeah. Sorry. In general, there would be some extra. Thanks. Wei is right. She's answering. The chef knows better than the wait staff. We did a particular thing with this where we were interested in going, taking this lambda to infinity and then turning on this, and that's the formula I'm giving you here. I'm sorry, that's of course true. So yeah, there's something of this form inside, something like that. Sorry, that's a better answer.
Yes.
I have not played with, I mean, we've written down the general formulas at some point and thought maybe it's useful for something, but I don't know.
Maybe just to follow up on Don's question.
Yeah.
Is it correct to say that in that differential equation, lambda can in principle be a function of, eta can be a function of lambda?
That might be interesting. Again, I'm not sure how much of those generalizations lead to something really new or not, but yeah, maybe.
Just to comment maybe on that, in the lower dimensional case, so when you consider Dilaton gravity or something like that, that you can also do at finite cut, then this eta can be made a function of lambda, and then you'll have a smooth trajectory that goes through the sea, but then turns on this deformation.
Sure. Yeah, no, that's great. Yeah, a lot of people have done a lot with this, so I should shortly sit down with it. So, Ted, I hope that helps. Then these energies and also derivatives of the entropy agree on the nose with this idea of a cutoff bulk. However, as everyone knows, if you do nothing but this and also don't truncate energy levels, then the matter fields in the bulk are blind to this deformation. With lambda 2, it's not as clear. But to guarantee some local bulk physics, the state of the art is really at this level of some large C structure that Jord and his friends introduced. It's a very beautiful thing, even at that level. Basically, this OO there refers to the fact that one of the key equations here at the level of general relativity is, if we consider the bulk story, is the radial Hamiltonian constraint equation. So basically, the radial Hamiltonian constraint equation combined with the definition of the quasi-local stress energy tensor at large C leads to these same equations. That is, you know, in the original MMV paper and also very streamlined nicely in Don's paper. And okay, if you that you could also think of as the classical limit of same statement. Classical limit of the radial Hamiltonian. The radial Hamiltonian is in the presence of matter, you know, there will also be some matter field, say some scalar field phi, which will appear there in the Hamiltonian. So radial field momentum, say. And if you think about the dictionary for these Dirichlet walls, the idea is that there's a Dirichlet condition on the field, so phi here, the scalar bulk field would be fixed locally, and the field momentum in the radial direction would not be fixed. That's similar to this being the extrinsic curvature not being fixed while the metric is fixed. And so this term is the operator, and so that's what I labeled as OO. So that's a very quick way to see that in order to obtain one of these bounded regions at the level of large C, large lambda TUF, with bulk matter treated locally, there's, you know, some double trace contribution added into here at every step.
So I understand that this side is defined in the bulk theory, right? So the bulk theory is a clear definition of this theory. Is the claim that there is a boundary definition of this, there is a field theory definition of this theory?
There's not a claim of that here in general, although I think it's fair to say that large C factorization goes in that direction. It says, you know, there's something about large C theories that would play well with this. I personally don't think it should be a precise theory, and I'll get, you know, I think the whole thing ends up decaying, really. I don't think a Dirichlet wall, you know, just like I always complain to everyone when they just add an end of the world willy-nilly, I don't think we can do that in the full theory. I think it will be more complicated. So that's my view of that, but I do think it's complete. I do take seriously these agreements, which at least fit with the idea that this might be an approximation to something larger. Now, there might be a nicer answer to your question, I mean, a more sort of available answer to your question, as usual, lower dimensions. So in a 1D putative boundary of a 2D, you know, then, and there were papers by Jord and David and Edgar and others, Andrew, on this, they didn't really focus on large radius, but you could. And you could, you know, since it's quantum mechanics, the issue with the irrelevance of the operators is less problematic, and possibly not problematic, especially if you can restrict yourself to low-lying O's here. So I think there's an interesting action item, which is to see if that can be done precisely in this dimensionality because it's quantum mechanics.
So by that is a concrete relationship between the structure we see in gravity with the finite cutoff and some conjecture boundary dual.
Well, so there are two things you could do, and people are talking about both. One is do quantum gravity here before even talking about these O's.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there are, as far as I know, there are three people thinking about this in the local region or soon to be and not quite getting the same answer, and maybe there's some. So we had a nice discussion yesterday. I think Zhenbin and Yorick could speak better about this, but from what I gathered, there's even some UV issue in this dimensionality. So if you start to try and make sense of this wall, you might be led to a UV issue. In which case, I actually like it better as perverse, but I think up here, there's or higher dimensions, there's no way you can just end the world however you want with no, you know, extra conditions. So if we see that kind of UV sensitivity already in 2D, that might in fact be nice. But then I suppose the question is there any well-defined treatment of this UV issue which indeed reproduces the UV issue on the gravity side, which reproduces this. Yeah. So, and then if that works just with pure but quantum gravity, one could then add bulk matter. So think about something like BFSS or something that is really large radius. There's some subtleties with that because, as we all know, ADS2, or SEN said it best, ADS2 doesn't, nothing happens in ADS2, so you're led to these modifications of it. And that would be the subtlety, I think, that it's not just pure. Like the seed theory would have to be a little more complicated than in the other cases. But in terms of not really being a 1D CFT, but that's something you guys all deal with routinely now. So.
So there's another perspective on this O term, I guess, which is, I mean, people usually talk about in terms of you need to fix the coefficient of this if you want a Dirichlet boundary condition.
Right.
Or the scalar field as well.
Right.
But could I take a different point of view where I say, in a Wilsonian sense, maybe I don't expect this coefficient to be fixed, but in that case I end up with some sort of Robin boundary condition of the scalar field generically, and maybe that's just as good of a theory?
Well, yeah, I think any local boundary condition is just as good, and there are counterterms that reflect that. So we thought, some about that beyond what was in the Origin Company's paper. But I think the essential thing here is that it be some local boundary condition that is a good boundary value problem at this level, and ideally also plays well with perturbative corrections, and that's possible.
But at least at small c, you don't expect local double trace deformations to give you a local boundary term for the, say, scalars at a finite distance cutoff at ADS.
Well, there's no ADS at small c. I mean...
Not small c on the gravity side. I thought this was a comment about the matter being coupled to the gravity. Is it not?
This c, no. This is... So large tuft and large c. What I have in mind is a truly holographic seed theory.
Right. I guess I'm confused by this comment then in relation to what we did, because I thought if you looked at a scalar field in ADS, say
yes.
ADS3,
yes.
And you just move the boundary into a finite distance, that you find that you seem to need bi-local or multi-local
if you insist
in the deformation.
Yeah, no. If
in order
you,
to reproduce the local boundary condition.
If you insist on describing it all at the original boundary, you would have that problem. But if you describe, if you simply follow the trajectory here, but you add the OOs.
With local OOs.
Local OOs at the, on a cylinder of size L. Then that is the whole point, is that if you add it locally, okay, let me draw the radial direction. We all know on the gravity side how to implement a local boundary condition, Dirichlet or not, but local. So that means that scalar waves that come and hit this boundary bounce off locally, right? That, if you insist on describing it the asymptotic boundary, would be some horrible, not local thing. But what we want to do is deform the theory so that it's local at the level, down to wherever it should really fail in these special theories by stringy effects or whatever.
Right.
But then, the whole point is, indeed, if you describe it out here, it's non-local. If you describe it here, it's local.
Well, the thing you're following at every point of this trajectory is local. But as we know, when you exponentiate a local term, you can get a non-local term. So.
Yeah, there could be all sorts of issues with resumming this and so on, but at the level of adding it to this definition of the theory in the differential equation, this OO is perfectly local. And I think, to me, the advantage is, even though at this level it's all the same as these bulk equations plus the scalar field equations, you know, is that it's a way of prescribing the theory that is simple to state at the level of this differential equation. So we can, you know, at least articulate the theory that, you know, we hope is part of a larger, more complete theory, in a way that's not just, oh, it's going to be some mess of you know, double trace operators. So if you do tradition, this should be really distinguished from sort of traditional holographic RG, where there all you're doing is you're drawing a line in the an imaginary line in the bulk. You're not really doing anything. You're just separating the system in these two ways, and you should, you know, nothing depends on that. That's the Kellermann-Symantec equation. That is that holographic RG is not this.
And the OO gets correct. I mean, this local deformation, it gets the full answer for the quantum scalar field propagating in this finite distance cutoff. This is not just a classical.
Like, I think it plays well with perturbative quantum corrections. No, there's no essential problem with that. Non-perturbatively, I think it's like, you know, the sort of philosophy I tried to explain 2 weeks ago, which nobody would remember, but that, you know, there's no reason for all of this to be stable non-perturbatively.
No, that's a different question. I thought we'd shown that this didn't work, the level of perturbative quantum corrections, but maybe you're telling me we didn't flow properly. And
You were properly careful with what you said. You didn't add this. So there's no, maybe you and Jorrit should have a bar fight about this, not me, but my, but I don't think there should be any fight. What you did in your paper, Don, is you've written 500 papers since then, so you might,
yeah.
I'll tell you what you did. Because as we discussed before, I do read your...
The TT bar itself wasn't enough, and you did something else, and we didn't work out the details of adding the scalar deformation.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
So there's absolutely no contradiction. It was, I really loved your streamlined explanation of it at the level of, so let me write one more equation, because, so a purist would do it this way with these homogeneous levels and whatnot. There's something we like to work with, which is what we call trace flow equation, which is this thing.
And I think it's part of my confusion. You're calling this OO, but really, at some order of equation theory, there are terms that couple it to the metric as well, especially things like OOT terms in addition. It's somehow the full thing that comes from, I mean, in that Hamiltonian,
yes,
pi squared has metrics in it.
It does, yes.
So it's not just a scalar double trace operator. You need something else that will...
Yes, it really is done in a section of Hartman, Jorrit, Edgar, and Tajdin. Yeah, so, again, all at the level of semi-classical gravity. There's lots of questions. I was going to write some down. It's probably not necessary. I do want to just say this philosophy one more time, even though it's probably a little silly. But, you know, on the one hand, there, you know, this, the idea that this is kind of a good guide to a part of the theory that needs to be completed, you know, I think that's just true. Or rather, it certainly needs to be completed. The idea that it might be a good guide based on some calculations at work, you know, is something that people could debate. But, you know, I just want to say a couple things about that. I mean, there have been dualities in the past that started from much less than this kind of agreement. Like the 11-dimensional supergravity theory, a lot of people said, oh, it makes no sense. String theory, is it? It softens everything. We understand that. That theory is not UV complete. You know, the fact that the spectra agree, who cares? And, you know, in real life, everything we do in physics, which, to be clear, I'm not comparing to this menu, but everything we do in physics is predicated on, you know, the standard model is not complete, and yet we do lots of calculations whether we work with it, and we just hope that it's part of a complete theory, which is our enterprise here. So I think with quantum gravity, we can well take that attitude rather than insisting on having the full, precise, finished theory every step of the way. But, you know, again, real-time opinions will differ on that. Yes.
I have a very remedial question. When people say that the energies in the bulk agree with this flow of the energies, so they're presumably using the Brown-York stress tensor at a finite radius.
Right.
But at infinity, that is divergent, and we have to add the counter terms.
Right, right.
But at a finite radius, it's finite.
Right.
So what do people do? Do they add a counter term or not?
Okay, so I'm glad you asked, because this is one of the counter terms. But as you can see, it's sort of the boring part of the energy. The nonlinear resummation is in the square root. And there's no counter term that changes that, but there is, the divergence, let's say the leading divergence that is usually canceled is this one, and that was the whole discussion of the one and my forgetfulness about it. But
so you're saying there's a possible finite counter term that people can add at a finite radius? But
more than one. I mean, I think there's a space of theories here at this level. It's yeah, absolutely.
But the agreement is with this other term.
You can add any counter term you like. If you're fixing a metric on the boundary, you can add any functional of the metric as a counter term.
Right.
And there's a family of those that goes smoothly to the usual counter terms at infinity.
Yeah, so on both sides you could play with this, and the idea would be you could match those, but those are just kind of nuisance parameters. I don't think they're part of the...
From the point of view of the sort of radial Hamiltonian evolution, the counter terms are just, shouldn't they just be canonical transformations of the field? So it's just sort of a redefinition of the boundary fields. I did want to, when you said this was not the holographic RG flow,
yes.
I wanted to add something to that comment, which is, I mean, it's not in a very dramatic way, which is that it has the opposite notion of UV and IR found in a certain sense. That is, if I choose to think of my TT bar term as an irrelevant term in my action, as opposed to being some weird sort of cutoff, then if I just think of it as a parameter in my theory, then it's a theory that I expect flows to the boundary CFT in the IR, which is the opposite of how we usually think about a holographic RG flow, where we think of the boundary as being the UV. Since I found out, it's been a bit striking to me how different that is.
Yeah, that's interesting. I just think of it as well as irrelevant. And so it could infect what was the UV part of the bulk, what we usually call that. And the MMV proposal was it just chops it off. people, including probably them, realized that more would be required to really chop it off for everybody. But anyway, I'm sure we agree. Douglas?
Why is the OO not connected to the bulk? Why is it connected to the bulk DS and not the bulk ADS?
Aren't you a vegetarian? Sorry. It also should be connected here. I got distracted by the menu.
My impression was that the idea was that if we don't have bulk matter fields, then if we just add the TT bar deformation but don't truncate, that's sort of like just changing, doing some integral transform at the boundary but not really putting a cutoff.
Yeah.
Is there an analogous idea for what happens when you have bulk matter field? Are there two things? One really puts a cutoff, and the other just changes the boundary conditions.
That's an interesting question. I think, in order to describe it from the original boundary, this is all before you go off in this direction, where it gets even more awkward to try and describe it in terms of the original boundary. Before you do that, if you wanted to describe it at the original boundary, you could maybe formally do it, but it would be this non-local thing. So.
But you think you're when you say describe it at the boundary, you don't mean that it would be different. You mean that it would be two different descriptions of the same thing. So.
Yeah. Well. Right. So. Let's say it this way. I think it would be. I haven't thought about. Too much about trying to do that. I think it would be kind of unnecessarily awkward because we know the dynamic. Let me say it this way: at the same level of this approximation, where there is a Dirichlet wall, putting in the local boundary condition here makes. So whereas in this picture, if we didn't do that, the stuff just flies through. If we now have a scalar wave, it hits this and bounces back, and it just, it's completely decoupled from what's over here. And, you know, we see that in the entropy, like when we do the DSDS joined entropies, we see, you know, it's zero until we join it, and then it's suddenly the right huge number. So, it, you know, trivial as that is in the gravity description, you know, maybe one could insist on describing all of that here, but it's, at that point, I wouldn't see the point of doing that.
But that one matching it to perturbative corruption, right? Perturbative quantum fluctuations, you will see a difference. If you just fix the asymptotic boundary versus fix the finite temperature issue.
Also, LT, do you mean, are you saying, did you say perturbative corrections or non-perturbative quantum corrections? Even perturbative, you think? I mean, if I just do perturbative and I just dress up the action in the bulk, and but I do the radial Hamiltonian for that perturbatively corrected effective action, does something go wrong? I mean,
then you are using the classical geometry to solve this condition boundary theory to work to the asymptotic infinity. But when the grad path they have perturbative fluctuations, then the metric changes, then it will cause different bonding condition at infinity.
Yeah, I'm just not sure if one couldn't just incorporate that in perturbative quantum gravity. Maybe it doesn't matter.
Yeah, these are not uniquely one-to-one,
but
one is.
Okay. I think you can take any boundary condition and just evolve it in the bulk. And then you will get some other boundary condition. It will look more complicated. Somehow, I think you should think of this as an inner product between an infrared wave function and a UV wave function, both solutions of the Wheeler-DeWitt equation. And then
I'm just talking about the matter part.
Well, I'm talking about all of them. So it applies to both matter and gravity.
I think, so one thing, Zhenbin, you stressed to me was, even before adding the O's, there's a nice quantum gravity test to do in this dimensionality, right? Which is related to what you're talking about right now, right? Not with the O's, but whether you got the right fluctuations here or not. But I don't think we have the answer to that yet. Yes.
Could you repeat what you said about the dimensionality where the OO is?
Just bulk 2D, boundary 1D, now OOs, who cares? They're not irrelevant.
And it's pretty clear that it won't be valid in higher dimensions, or?
I don't think so. I try to not be too hypocritical. If you take some solution in higher dimensional gravity, and then you just declare you want to end the world somewhere, you know, that's not, you know, generally available. There are, like, if you have some solution, you might be able to end it with some compact geometry in some, you know, correct way, or maybe in very special cases with some orientifold end of the world sort of thing.
But when you won't even get a slice that's flat at any radius.
Well, you probably can foliate it some.
Isn't there a paper by Hartman and company talking about how to do this in higher dimensions, admittedly only at large end?
Yeah, that's it. So at large end, this. UV thing I mentioned would just be packaged as the boundary. It's a little bit like Randall syndrome, where, you know, this was just packaged as some UV brain. But in reality, it's some more complicated thing.
I have one question. So suppose that you started with a CFT, two-dimensional CFT with zero lambda, and has a dual ADS geometry. There is some observer in the middle of ADS, right? And then at some point, one decides to turn on this lambda, right? So then after, let's say, t equal to zero, then lambda is, maybe you can increase it slowly or whatever. The question is whether the observer in the middle can do any experiment to notice that the lambda has been turned on.
So you're turning it on and you're not doing anything more, like you're not...
You're doing exactly what you said here.
But also truncating the spectrum to real levels?
No.
Okay, with no truncation, I am on your side that they don't see it.
I'm not taking a side. I think there's an argument that they don't see it that is based on the idea that this only affects the boundary graviton,
On the other hand, we are changing the energy level, so how can it be that we don't see anything?
Well, okay, I'm glad. Okay, you're phrasing.
Let me say.
I
think it would be nice to answer this question.
I completely agree with
you. I'd love to have a good argument.
I totally agree. There's even a dumber example, which is called JJ bar, which we introduced with Ofer and Aharoni and Bercuse, where we came to the conclusion that you could see it in the bulk via some D-brain calculation. I think we did not include D-brain recoil in that calculation. So this was an analog of this stuff, where it was really just a marginal deformation by product of currents. She and Dan Friedman, with some kind of...
Yuezhou, right.
So you guys did a kind of field theory treatment where you saw the bulk effects basically cancel out of all the vertices, right? That was...
Wait, this is before it gets causally connected to the would-be boundary, or...?
This is JJ bar, doesn't even have... It's a warm-up problem even for...
I think in that case it sounds more believable that you don't have an effect in the bulk. In that case, I'm more confident. In that case, I think that the right answer is that you don't see it in the bulk.
Yeah, I mean, even I did. Okay, I don't want to speak for anyone else except that I did. You know, Ofer wasn't convinced of this even in that case. So maybe even in that case, we have to be a little more careful. But
it's hard to at least affect the definition of your boundary condition, right?
If you take
the perspective to the counter term like this. That was taking earlier, the counter term is like a redefinition of your fields. Then you got to plug in that redefinition to see where your new boundary is. That is, you can compensate for it by relabeling the fields, but it's not automatically going to be the same boundary condition unless you adjust for that.
Okay. That's, yeah.
Without the truncation, does it make sense? Like the...
I don't think so. If we don't truncate... I mean, to me, unitarity is the biggest principle, although maybe that's not popular. I don't really understand the other discussions going on at this workshop on that, but if we maintain unitarity, then this whole thing is a glorified two-state system, and then the whole question is, well, how much emerges from that at large lambda to large c? So, yeah, if that's what you're saying, I agree, and it... I'm not going to put words in your mouth, but let me say also, too bad Mark Mazet isn't here anymore, but, you know, they had a very interesting point, which is that at the level of pure gravity states, these BGZ black holes, if you truncate the spectrum that corresponds precisely to considering states, BGZ black hole states, which would be outside of the cylinder that you're trying to cut off. So in other words, at the point where you hit the putative boundary, you're hitting the horizon of the black hole. So their idea was that was lining up for a reason, and so it seems to me from that point of view also it makes sense to truncate this. And then, you know, how do you show that locality in the bulk emerges at the right level? Well, one approach would be to assume we understood that in ADS, which we don't. We don't really understand how the bulk locality emerges from the matrix degrees of freedom, but if we have that statement, can we then infer from this deformation that it will remain true, even if we truncate levels? So that's a question. But I think also in this 1D, 2D thing, the idea is to incorporate the truncation of energy levels and see what happens. So
I'm confused about the physics of what we're doing here. And let me ask this before one makes his next comment. So we were talking a minute ago about comparing the deformed theory to the undeformed theory, and is there really a difference in the bulk? And if I understand correctly, what we mean by the deformed theory, if we define it by this Hamiltonian constraint evolution, is that we move the boundary into some finite radius, say at ADS3. Now, if I take a little BTZ black hole and I throw it at that boundary, what happens when it reaches the boundary? If the boundary condition is really that it's some finite radius boundary, we've fixed the metric, surely the black hole can't pass through the boundary, because once the black hole just kind of straddles the boundary, you wouldn't have
good.
The right metric anymore.
I like this way of approaching it.
So if this is really I'm not sure that I've just described the truncated or the untruncated theory, but surely if we really have changed the boundary condition to something else, it does change the bulk physics in this way, unless you're thinking about a complicated...
Well, I think this is part of the question Juan asked before, although he may have had in mind bulk matter. You're saying there's a pure gravity version of this question.
There's a pure gravity version of this.
I'm quite
certain that when you can analyze this, you can see a difference. So in ADS, if you kick a black hole, you know, it has some certain frequency. I thought that, which you can also, which you can describe, in fact, in ADS by a change of conformal frames, a bunch of boundary gravitons running around a black hole and stuck in the center. It's the same thing. In the same way, I think you can see this shift of the frequency of oscillation as a change in the frequency of boundary gravitons in the finite system.
Good.
So for a fixed conformal frame, I think the answer must be yes, you see a difference and the black hole bounces off the boundary sooner.
Perfect. Okay, I see what you're saying. And indeed, just to stress it again, of course, this is what you're saying is based on the locality of the boundary condition for the metric at the Broaden boundary, which is something that you can, in my view, kind of awkwardly describe at the original boundary if you wish in a non-local way, but you can also just do what you said. So, why don't you and Juan have a discussion about it?
Does this answer the question? I agree that it could be described as a strange boundary condition at infinity, but in terms of at least the natural bulk metric variable that we're given, there seems to be a physical difference in the solutions.
Yeah, I'd like to understand it.
I mean, I think
this oscillation is just, we know all the energy levels because this is just the SL2 descendants of the black hole in the center.
So you're saying that what Don is saying could relate to the dressing of the levels.
One could analyze this problem and how whether there is a reflection phase that could be observed by someone in the middle.
Well, but I guess now it's getting very philosophical, but maybe we could just be the black hole, and we are the observer, and we bounce off the boundary. I mean, when you say who observes it, can it be somebody made of black holes?
There would have to be two. It could be with two particles or two black holes. One stays at the center, the other one oscillates.
Okay, yeah, they see it come back.
There is in empty ADS, there is a shift. There is a double trace operator that has some shifts in their energy levels. And when you do the formation, there will be another shift. And, there's a difference that can be in principle observed by someone inside.
These black holes could just merge, you know, is that an observable effect?
You can't actually do that in ADS3.
ETC black holes.
Oh, sorry.
You can't put two BTC black holes in to start with, you only put one in.
Oh, okay. Even moving ones and letting there be back reaction.
You can make they always have a common horizon around them. You can have stuff happening inside the black hole, but you can't have two separate black holes.
It's topological sensitive.
Okay, you're saying even if you're saying no matter if you let the space expand with time or anything like that.
As long as you're satisfying positive energy.
Okay. Sorry, Gary.
I mean, if you add local bulk matter, clearly original normal modes of the scalar field would change if you have boundary conditions at a finite radius.
That's with this in place. Yeah, I think that's not under
question. That is something
question.
That an observer could see.
For sure. Yeah.
The point is that the observer would not see that if you just do purely the TT bar deformation.
Oh, without the O.
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, the question is, what is the bulk effect of the TT bar? Just to understand this.
Okay, so then you see.
And then understand the trend. I think this would illuminate a little bit, understanding it better would illuminate the relationship between the boundary spectrum and the bulk.
I think so.
Experiment. There's going to be a shift to the bound state energy of the
there is a shift in the orbit. Well, it would be nice to see how that shift. Of course, there is a shift in the energy levels, but there is also a shift. There is a shift of everyone. So,
the chef has been patiently waiting. And actually, I want to tell you about the special today. So it's related to the locality of the bulk matter. So there is this very special model where the deformation. Becomes local in the bulk without any extra bell and whistle, but it's the price you pay for that is that it's a special model. So, I'm sorry this went on, but way the chef song will take over now.
Thank you.
Sorry about that.
Okay, that may probably use this. Click this. So what I'm going to tell you is to start with a very, very special model of ADS-CFT that's considering string theory, ADS-3 times some other manifold, and so let me this is something called this single trace TT by deformation or JT by deformation. So so the feature of that is unlike what Eva told you before, that usually the bulk is still locally ADS3 or locally BTZ, but you put a cutoff or change the boundary conditions. The feature with this single trace deformation is it really change the bulk, the local geometry. So let me draw like this triangle diagram that I like very much. So before doing any deformation, I start with very special things with ADS3 times some internal manifold with NS flux. And we know that with NS flux, the theory, type 2B string theory, allows a weakly coupled worksheet description. And see, the ADS3 part is described by this Weissman-Norton model with group SL2. And then there is a dual theory that corresponds to the string theory in this particular setup. And that's, we know in general, it has to be a two-dimensional conformal space theory, but there are certain understanding about this, what this CFT2 is, although we don't have a complete understanding. So we know that, I think there is a consensus that the long string sector of the bulk is captured by this symmetric product with a set CFT with central charge 6K, where K is the number of five brains that made up this geometry, and the symmetric product with P copies, and P is the number of this NS1 strings that made up this geometry. So then, of course, this captures the long string sector, but they're from this string set or gravity set, we know that there's this WZ dot model beyond the long string sector. It also has this the short string sector, and that the understanding of that is not super clear in this setup, but so for what I'm going to tell you, these conclusions will mainly applies for the long string sector.
Could you explain what the long string sector is?
So in this SL2 WCW model, and you have representations of SL2, and then you have this discrete representation, and also this principal continuous representation. And then you could, for both representations, you could introduce a spectral flow parameter, which is roughly speaking to so this ADS3, it has a circle at the boundary is a cylinder. This is a circle. So the spectral flow parameter is roughly speaking the string, how many times the string runs around this boundary circle. So the spectral flow, the representation of this short string, the discrete is called the short strings, and the spectral flow, the like the whole tower of this spectral flow set, continuous representation is called this long string sector. And
maybe correct your comment. Normally, if you put a string in ADS, the string will fall to the center because of gravitational attraction. But these backgrounds have some background flux, which is like an electric field for the string. And so it pushes the string outwards. So you have a string bound near the boundary of the circle, of the boundary circle. Then there's an equilibrium, a cancellation of forces between gravity and this electric force. And then the string can be at basically at any radial position, and there is a continuum of states and so on. And Wei was referring to the algebraic description of those.
Thank you. Okay, so now, so this, then this, if we consider this symmetric product setup, then we can define the so-called single trace deformation for this CFT, and that is given by something very similar to this, but let me write it here. So by a differential equation, so it's sum over all this. So the symmetric product has p copies, and this I labels each copy of the seed CFT, and then this single trace TT by deformation is double trace deformation and sum over all the copies, and that's why it's called the single trace deformation. So if you do a double trace, what you double trace analog in this symmetric product, what you are going to do is to sum over Ti, T bar, J, and sum over all I and J's. Okay, so that's the field theory setup. And in the string and space-time setup, there is something very interesting that we noticed, that is we can on the string worksheet, we can write deformation of the string worksheet theory also by some differential equation that is proportional to, I'm not going to keep track of all the indices, integral of the string worksheet with J1 like J2. Where this J1 is some U1, this worksheet, worksheet another current of a U1 symmetry. And in the TT bar case, so we know that this SL2, this one of the SL2, this SL2 WZW model, the global part, the global part of this algebra correspond to the SL2 on the dual space time. So basically, this U1 in translations in the correspond to the target space translation of a direction in ADS3 correspond to these translations in the dual field theory, and that's this T. So basically, I can write this as J1 J2 in the field theory set. This is the double trace, but I can write it in this way, where J M is just correspond to translation in one of these two directions, and x dx plus, where x and x bar labels the space-time now coordinates. So this and this this is very similar to this deformation in the field theory set, and this deformation is nothing but is a TST transformation, and with parameter lambda. So, so what is TST? TST is we have in ADS3, we have these two boundary coordinates, and then we can T dualize along one of the boundary coordinate and shift the other coordinate. Let's label this by say RUV, where U and V are the Lyapunov coordinate in ADS3, and then what I'm calling J1 here correspond to translation in U, and J2 here correspond to translation in V, and the TST is T-dual along U, and then I shift V to V plus lambda U, and then I do T-dual along U again. After that, the bulk geometry will change completely, and it will become it will become a completely new geometry. So I'm not going to write down the metric, but just list certain features. I can do this TST procedure for both ADS, for BTZ, and also global ADS, all these locally ADS geometries. And that way, I can generate a class of classical solutions. And for this, so they have the property that at the IR, namely R to be very small. So that's BTZ solution. And in the UV, and this is a linear dilaton solution. And so after this TST transformation, we will generate a class of these RJ flow solutions that interpolate between BTC and linear dilutone solutions. And so these linear dilutones, these are these vacuums for this little string theory. That's they in the Kutuzov's first paper. They want they have they said that this TST and LST, well, that's the connection. So is it roughly clear what's going on here?
I don't know this CFT, but is TI like super well defined?
Sorry.
Is there? I mean, what is the definition of TI?
TI. Here.
Yeah.
The stress tensor on the SID CFT.
This is it. This is just a, like, is it not just like one point in the moduli space of the CFT that you have that description that you don't really care about that point? Or?
Oh, I would say the explicit definition of the single trace deformation is explicitly written down at just at this this point of the moduli space.
But yeah, I guess the idea is that because on the worksheet you can define it at any point, then it's like one of the space-time fields. Should have, a, in principle, a description in the field theory. Right? So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the, it isn't TT bar in the field theory.
It's not really TT bar.
Certainly not the overall TT bar.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I've wondered that too. Why don't people do more with just taking the worksheet definition and translating that through the ADS-EFT dictionary into what it is in the boundary theory. I mean, I'm confused by what the obstruction to that is, as opposed to focusing on this symmetric product point or sector.
Well, in general, I haven't tried to do that.
Okay, it's not that there's necessarily an obstruction.
If we think that this part is the definition that, I think there might be a way to just define it using the bulk and the string.
So, yesterday I was describing these infinite classes of other radius solutions, ADS3 solutions. Mm-hmm. If you do TST transformations on those, mm-hmm. won't you get some similar story? I mean, so on the right hand side, everything seems very connected to this particular CFT, Fulcrum mm-hmm. symmetric orbital Fulcrum, and so on. Mm-hmm. But on the gravity side, it seems to be much more generic for any ADS3 solution. So
yeah, I would say this expression. Depends on nothing else than a TST transformation. So that thing, like any TST transformation, can be the worksheet can be written in such a way.
Can your backgrounds be written only with pure NS flux?
No, so the five-point flux. So that's a different.
Okay. Thing. Yeah, then that's.
You can still do the TST transformation, right? I mean, maybe it doesn't give you anything sensible. Just from a gravity point of view.
That's, that was the thought.
So yeah, the other two circles, I'm not sure what's going on. Mm-hmm.
So if it starts with our background, then I think there's already some discussion that's correspond to either non-commutative or depth or such deformations. And so yeah, there's like the basic expression does not depend on like any like what background you have. It's in principle it also applies for our background, but although I don't know, I cannot trust the RNS formalism of if there's our background. But this formula, this expression is true. But there is something we want to check against, if there's a duality. So what can be checked in these things is that we can check, from the worksheet, we can derive the long string spectrum, the relation between the long string spectrum before and after the deformation. And that spectrum can be compared to this TD by deformation, and they agree. And that part of the calculation relies on certain assumptions on the state before doing the deformation. So if you do it for RR, you won't get that spectrum.
Go ahead. No, you go ahead because I talked a lot. But
I have a very naive question. So, is there a maximum size of a black hole you could fit in that, or
there's here?
Yeah.
We can have we can have a rotating charged black hole.
But is there a maximum size, the horizon size, or does it make it arbitrarily big?
That depend on the deformation parameter, so it's the same. So
it says that it caps off where you could fit the black hole, right?
Usually in this game, lots of discussions are about the opposite sand that Eva was talking about. So then, it's something like that. If I insist lambda is positive. So at high energy, there's absolutely no problem except that it has the densities like Hagedorn growth. Mm-hmm. The would-be problem is really at low energy, the ground state. So then if the deformation is too big, and then because the ground state has this, minus C over 12, then this term, let me just focus on the one. So this term would be very negative, and the spectrum would become complex. And there is a critical value for this lambda, and that's that critical value can be actually, so here, the ground state is the analog of global ADS. And that solution can be found. And so what happens is that the entire solution would be like interpolating global ADS and linear dilution solution. And at this critical point or beyond this critical point, there's some field in this solution become complex. Mm-hmm. So otherwise, the BTCs are all fine.
And if you try to make the black hole, take the limit of the black hole being very big so that you just retain some sliver around the near the wall or something like that, does something interesting happen?
There's no cutoff in this picture. With this sun.
If you do the other sun, there's a very intriguing thing, which is that there's the infrared of the geometry, then there's a repulson-like singularity. So one hope is that that gets resolved and just excises the rest. But that, so in that case, there would be a cutoff if that all works out, but it's not known, is it?
Yeah.
But with a linear dilaton, you don't get anything interesting.
There's no reason to think it's cut off.
Cut off, but some clustering at the wall brings something interesting. Maybe I'm still. The dilaton, as you get close to the dilaton.
You mean where it starts to be linear dilaton?
Yeah.
Probably some crossover happens, right?
The solution is smooth. There's no sharp wall.
I agree. But you might have some interesting behavior once you're sort of in the linear, once the black hole has gone into the linear dilaton regime or something like that.
Question. So you have BDC, which has parameters. As what do they map to in the linear dilaton? Do you just get the linear dilaton, or do you get also blackholes and black strings on the other side?
You mean the interpolating solution here, or?
And you have, I mean, the BDC. I mean, that you're mapping that.
This is a solution that at the. It's a smooth solution that at one.
So it's BTC asymptotic to the linear dilaton.
Yeah, asymptotic is linear dilaton. Yeah, and this, but so indeed there's BTC, like original BTC mass and the charge, mass and angular momentum. And that, roughly speaking, that this spectrum. Can be mapped from like calculating this conserved charge, the gravitational charges of this new solution, and then this there's some subtlety with the dilaton and B field, but there is a way to find to arrange the phase space so that the BTCs. Satisfy this spectrum.
I mean, so one of the things we think we realized at this workshop is that we can write your deformation as a deformation of the space-time energy of the strings, just write it directly like that. The wound strings.
That's D1. Yes, the energy.
Did you say there was a relation between the world sheet deformation and TST?
Oh, yes.
Could you explain that?
This is if I have a world sheet theory, like something like J mu mu plus B mu mu, so that's my world sheet theory for like a very general, without any assumptions, just with a metric B field. And then a TST transformation is just doing something very simple on the worksheet. So let's call this as M mu nu. And then it will just transform. So if I do a TST along like two directions and with parameter lambda, then the new this M matrix would become some original mu M plus I plus lambda parameter times a metric anti-symmetric metric times M tilde inverse. And then so the gamma is other components are zero, but it's non-zero in the these two U1 directions, and then it's easy to check by that this is what TST is doing, and it's indeed satisfies this differential equation. And this part doesn't depend on anything else, just the TST. Let me just say a few words about what has been.
So can I say something? Okay. So this TST transformation generates a new solution to the supergravity equations of motion. So you would expect it could be expressed as some marginal deformation of the world sheet. So what's interesting is that the TST is exactly this combination with a wedge that looks a lot like the definition of TT bar.
Yeah, since you mentioned this marginal deformation, so I said that this part doesn't depend on the background. But if we want this occurrence, like the deformation, to be related to any like marginal deformation, we want the current to be like a chiral anti-chiral, at least up to some topological terms. And that is only true for certain background. And that is true for, luckily, for this, all this ADS, for this setup. So that's that's the reason why the spectrum derivation only works for this setup. Yeah, let me just finish with a summary about what has been done in this this thing. The spectrum, the long string spectrum, can be worked out and matches to the TT bar deformation. Another thing is this, for this new black hole black string solutions, and one can match the Bekenstein-Hawking entropy of all these solutions to the the entropy from the this TT bar the single trace TT bar deformation, only one subtlety is that in this I need to say what I want to what's the energy in this single trace TT bar. So that's that is to be understood as the energy, the sum over all the energy in each of the copy, and then so the matching between this BTC entropy and this TT bar entropy is with the assumption that these energies is equally distributed among these copies. Or alternatively, you can say that assuming that all the copies have the same temperature, and then you can match this from match the black hole entropy and the TT bar entropy.
Is that a non-trivial result, or is that something that's guaranteed by just this procedure?
I'm not sure whether it's guaranteed, but we found it a bit confusing at the first. Because there is some subtlety about the dilaton, because you, given a solution, you're free to add certain constant to the dilaton, and it's with a, like, maybe there are some better ways to choose it, but we need to find the right dilaton to make this match.
Can I just ask my question again? I mean, cause everything you do on this TST transformation is just on the ADS3 part, so it should apply to any ADS3 solution with Ramon-Ramon, Ron-Ever-Schwarz fluxes. And then you'll get this linear dilaton construction, you'll get the black hole entropy. And you seem to be, you don't have the world signature. I understand that, and that's a very nice thing of what you've done, because you can match everything there. Mm-hmm. But it seems to be a prediction that there are some sort of TT bar deformations of any CFT with an ADS3 dual, in particular the ones I was describing yesterday, where if your final conclusion is correct, then the spectrum is modified in precisely the same way.
If the background is not NSNS, I think there I'm not sure I get exactly the same solution here.
I suppose it's the assumption. If it's just acting on the ADS3 part of the solution.
Yeah, but it mixes the B field and the metric. So if the B field is not that, if you have R background, then you won't get exactly the same thing. It's very late.
Do you want to make some sort of final remarks, or?
Just maybe I read something that about something could be done later or hopefully soon. So there's this issue about calculating the correlation functions even for the double trace deformation. But using the string techniques, it seems that there's it's doable to do the a correlation function calculation and in a way that could be matched to a CFT calculation. Some other things I hope I can understand better is that so the string set of this story seems to be well defined. There is a worksheet, there is space time, but on the field theory set is a bit without using symmetric product, I don't know how to define this single trace deformation. And Eva suggests that maybe we just use that as the deformation and see what happens there. Alternatively, maybe there's that there could be some further understanding about say I use that just starting from the symmetric product say what properties it has and in what sense the duality is red and do we really need to assume P is very large or really take this seriously and see if there are certain other formulation of the theory the double trace case coupled to topological gravity or Pass-integral formulation and how these techniques could be used in this I think I'll just stop. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, thank you.